Rebecca Carroll, and this is Midday. Many of us may remember Martin Shkreli, who in 2015 raised the price of Daraprim, an antiparasitic drug, from $13.50 per tablet to $750. Or we recall the price for a two-pack of EpiPens, which cost about $100 in 2007 and rocketed to $608 in 2016. It's a sign of a larger problem, where medication that was affordable 1 month suddenly became incredibly expensive the next. After years of price hikes and life-saving drug shortages, a group of health systems is trying to form a nonprofit that will supply hospitals with generic drugs. Here to talk about how this new nonprofit might work is Dr. Aaron Fox, Director of Drug Information at the University of Utah, and Dan Lillenquist, the Vice President of Intermountain Healthcare's Enterprise Initiative Office, which is the group spearheading this nonprofit initiative. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Aaron, I'm going to start with you. So, broadly speaking, why are brand names so much more expensive?
Well, brand name products are expensive because the drug companies have certainly spent a lot of money to do the innovation. They've spent a lot of money to go through that FDA approval process. So, you know, we kind of expect brand name products to be expensive, but what we don't expect are older generic drugs to be expensive or to have sudden price hikes.
Let me go back a minute. The difference between, if you could explain, a generic drug and a name drug.
Oh, sure. So a brand name drug is a drug that is usually new. It's still on patent. This is a drug that is relatively new. A generic drug is an older product. So after about 17 years, a drug can go off patent, and we can see a lot of competition. So some of the recent examples of generic drugs, we have seen Lipitor go generic and have lots of pricing competition there. You know, even things like ibuprofen that are over the counter, those actually started as brand name drugs a very long time ago.
And so how does it change the actual drug to go from brand to generic?
You know, it usually actually doesn't change the drug at all. It's the same molecule. In some cases, the brand name companies actually have a separate unit of their manufacturing facility where they make the exact same pills. And, you know, on one line, those get labeled as brand name Lipitor. And on the other line, those get labeled as generic atorvastatin. So there, in a lot of cases, the generic product is actually the same as the brand name drug, literally. In other cases, it's a very good copy, and that means it's going to work the same for patients.
Dan, how did the idea to create this initiative come about?
Well, as Intermountain Healthcare, we're a large integrated health system in Utah, and we see every day the strain that generic drugs, really the high cost of generic drugs, are putting on our patients. And as Aaron mentioned, you know, there's a patent protection period. We want new drug innovation. So when a new drug comes on the market, there's a period of time where they get exclusive rights to sell that drug that they invented. But after it goes off patent, really the formula for that drug goes in the public domain. And we think it should remain there. And what's been troubling to us, and we see this every day on our health system, is that drugs that were developed in the 50s, 60s, and 70s all of a sudden are running into shortage problems and have correspondingly massive price hikes. And what's happened is you've seen generic drug companies corner the market on specific drugs. And if it's a drug that's a life or death drug, like Daraprim, the drug that Martin Shkreli took over, then people are willing to pay whatever it takes to get the drug to save a life. And so we see that every day. And our initiative here is to say, enough. These drugs are owned by society, and our not-for-profit initiative is to make sure that those drugs remain in the public domain, available and affordable to everyone. And so that's why we're organizing the hospital systems around the country to do this. We have the scale to do it, and it's the right thing to do.
You said with the Daraprim, you know, people will pay whatever they have to. But who can afford a $750 pill?
No, they simply can't. And people are, so the hope is from these folks who've raised up the price that it'll be just blended into their overall insurance rates, and that they've hidden the cost of these things into your health insurance premium. But we all know we're all being priced out of the health insurance market because our premiums are too expensive. So this is really a situation where for a long time, this has been developing over the last several years, where folks have cornered generic markets and raised the price. And we now reach a tipping point where it's causing shortages of key drugs. The way to extract the highest price, by the way, is to create a shortage of that drug. And that's what monopolies do. That's why monopolies are so damaging to society. And that's what you're seeing in the generic drug space. And we feel like, again, the hospitals who purchase these drugs and administer them every day have the ability and certainly the motivation for our patients to try to solve this.
I'm talking with Dan Lillenquist, Director of Special Projects at Intermountain Healthcare, and Dr. Aaron Fox, Professor and Expert on Drug Shortages at University of Utah. Aaron, how does a drug get from the manufacturer to a hospital or a pharmacy and then to a patient?
That's a great question. So the manufacturer actually makes the drug, and then in 90% of the cases, most of the time, that drug is shipped to a wholesaler. There are three very large wholesalers in the United States. One is AmerisourceBergen, one is Cardinal, and one is McKesson. These big three wholesalers have distribution centers all over the United States, and hospitals order daily, sometimes even twice a day, and those distribution centers send the drug to the hospital. And then once it gets to the hospital, the doctor writes an order for the drug. Pharmacists verify if it's safe, that dose and the interactions for the patient, and make sure everything is safe. Sometimes the pharmacy also needs to prepare it, and then it gets walked up to the patient's room and administered by a nurse.
And so at what point does it become about less about the patient and more about the money, and more about the chain of events that happens?
I'm not 100% sure about what you mean. I think, you know, in the hospitals, we have relatively few choices in a lot of cases. We need antibiotics, we need fluids, we need morphine and drugs like that. These are very basic drugs. They've all been around for, you know, at least 50 years. And so these are actually the drugs that are most concerning and short for hospitals right now.
Right. So, I mean, that's what I mean. Yeah. So it's like what you described was a very sort of, you know, like this is where it's made, this is how it gets mm-hmm. to here, and then it gets to the patient. And yet, you know, we're trying to figure out a way to make these drugs available.
Right. So one of the reasons why we have drug shortages in the United States is that, especially for injectable products, it's a very concentrated market. We usually only have one or two companies making these products. And there isn't additional capacity in the system to take up the slack if one of those companies has some type of a manufacturing problem. And unfortunately, these factories are old. The manufacturers have not done a good job of reinvesting into the quality and their production facilities. And so in many cases, it's a manufacturing failure due to poor quality that is causing a disruption of one of those suppliers, and then there's not enough resiliency in the supply chain for the other supplier to make up the difference.
And do generic drugs have to be exactly as effective as the brand name drug?
They do. They do, absolutely. And, you know, testing is required, and FDA approval looks at all of those documents to make sure that products do work as well. Generic products work as well as the brand. And, you know, for many products, there actually isn't even a brand name product available anymore. There's only generic.
Right. And so, Dan, the company will need to be an FDA-approved manufacturer of certain generic medications, right, that will either make the drugs itself or contract with other manufacturers to make the generic drugs?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Essentially, what our goal is to have this company act more like a societally owned public utility. Now, if you think about power generation, for example, in New York City, your public service commissioners are concerned with adequacy of power first, right, and then price second. And so by setting up this not-for-profit generic drug company that will act as an FDA-approved manufacturer, and again, we will probably use contract manufacturing, but as Aaron said, we expect that supply chain to be redundant and effective and have updated equipment because the safety of our patients has to come first. But and then the next portion is to make sure that those drugs are appropriately priced and that nobody, no company can get a hold of a shortage situation and then extract, you know, really, really high prices out of their customers. And so it's really the combination of the two. Our first goal, first and foremost, is to solve the shortage issue, which goes hand in hand with the you know, egregious price gouging that we see in this space.
You mentioned New York City. In the U.S., you know, we have to look at healthcare through a socioeconomic and multiracial cultural lens. There are health disparities across racial groups, from access to healthcare and generic drugs and increased risk factors. With Utah being predominantly white, are you concerned that this initiative doesn't address the other marginalized groups and communities of color across the country?
So I just want to make it very, very clear. Our goal is to make sure that essential generic medications are available and affordable to everyone, and that means nationally and with every hospital system in the country. We're going to start with hospitals because really the acute shortage there really is a matter of life and death. And we're starting there first, but we hope to be really a positive influence on the overall generic market. And we hope that will benefit every member of society. Again, as a society, we paid for these drugs a very high price through the patent protection period. And we're just determined that once they become generic, they stay in the public domain within reach of everybody.
And so what does that look like exactly? I mean, in terms of scalability.
Well, there's a lot of scale that's required to make these drugs efficiently. If you think about setting up a drug manufacturing line, there are very, very high fixed costs to enter to set up a line. But each individual dose, the marginal cost of that dose is very, very small. You mentioned Daraprim earlier. Daraprim, you can buy a kilogram of pyrimethamine, of pharmaceutical grade pyrimethamine, which is the brand generic name of Daraprim, for about $47 a kilogram. You can press 40,000 tablets, Daraprim tablets or pyrimethamine tablets, out of that kilogram. We've done the math. We think we can make the entire nationwide supply of Daraprim for less than $500,000 a year. And Martin Scorelli and his and Turing have turned that market into a $300 million market, where they're extracting, you know, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars a year from desperate patients. And that's exactly the kind of thing we hope to do, is to pop the price of these drugs and really put them back into the public domain.
Aaron, that's what I sort of was alluding to in terms of the money, how it becomes less about healthcare and more about a Scorelli who by however means make it so unaffordable. What does it mean for a drug to have a restricted distribution?
Yeah, so there, and maybe Aaron, you want to take this one. Aaron and I are neighbors in Utah. but let me just say the restricted distribution change for generics in particular, they've used, companies like Turing and others have used these bit limited distribution chains to try to restrict competitors from getting enough samples to do the testing required to go to market, to compete against them. And so there are other ways that companies like Turing are trying to create barriers to entry so they can keep, you know, making, again, the hundreds of millions of dollars they make on these drugs. And we're going to work through, as a company, we're going to try to figure out how to get through each one of those areas. Right now, there doesn't appear to be a lot of folks fighting for markets as small as the Daraprim market. If you price that market appropriately, it's not a $300 million market. It probably is nationwide a $1 to $2 million market. And private capital doesn't readily flow into markets that expects to collapse. And so we think that might be a good role for a not-for-profit generic drug company.
And, you know, the only thing that I'll add is there is a bill headed to Congress called the CREATES Act, and the idea around that bill is to prevent the shenanigans that the drug companies are using to prevent folks from getting samples so that they can make generics. So we'll see if that gets any traction in Congress.
And Dan, it sounds like part of the problem with generic drug pricing is due to FDA regulations. So why not lobby to change FDA regulations instead of forming your own company?
Well, even then, even with the backlog that that Dr. Scott Gottlieb at the FDA has been prioritizing work through that backlog. That still doesn't necessarily solve the problem when you have an incumbent player who has a dominant market position, and especially when that player can single-handedly produce the entire market supply. In those situations, they really are more in a natural monopoly-type situation. So if you were going to risk capital and you know that the current player already had 100% of the market, and that if you entered the market, they could collapse the price and wipe out your investment, you wouldn't do it. And in many of these generic drug markets, that's precisely the situation they're in. So private capital isn't really, even if the FDA approval process took only a day, still it's expensive to set up production lines. And if you go into a market where the incumbent player can just collapse the price and drive you out and then raise them up later, that doesn't work very well. The reason why we're working with the hospitals is the hospitals, we know who the bad actors are here. We've worked with them. We've seen it. We are going to pre-contract with this not-for-profit generic drug company, that if they're able, this company is able to take the price of a certain drug down by a certain amount, I mean a significant amount, that these hospitals will agree to buy that drug from this not-for-profit company and to do so on a long-term contract. And that will prevent the incumbent player from collapsing the price to drive us out.
So Dan, I'm going to stop you there for time, but I appreciate it. I'm Rebecca Carroll, and I've been speaking with Dan Lindquist, Director of Special Projects at Intermountain Healthcare, and Dr. Aaron Fox, Professor and Expert on Drug Shortages at University of Utah. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks.